The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and probably from the Harvard Women's Health Watch as well. First, I'm going to read an interesting article that I started last time that's called Gene Editing, a One-Time Fix for Dangerously High Cholesterol. This comes from the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2023. Among your more than 20,000 different genes, one provides instructions for a protein called PCSK9, which helps regulate levels of bad LDL cholesterol in your bloodstream. About 1 in 250 people has a variant in this gene that causes LDL cholesterol to skyrocket, sometimes to more than 3 times the optimal ceiling of 100 milligrams per deciliter. This genetic condition, called familial hypercholesterolemia, is the leading cause of premature heart attack in America. But other people have different PCSK9 gene variants that have the exact opposite effect. Their LDL cholesterol is extraordinarily low, and their risk of heart attack is far below average. This discovery, made by Dallas Heart Study researchers in 2005, spurred industry scientists to develop drugs called PCSK9 inhibitors. From a drug development perspective, it was very exciting, because just 10 years later, there were 2 FDA-approved medications that could dramatically lower LDL, says Dr. Pradeep Natarajan, Director of Preventive Cardiology at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. The drugs are called alirocumab, or Praluent, and evolocumab, or Repatha, and they can slash LDL levels by 50%. Taking one of these drugs with a cholesterol-lowering statin can further decrease a person's risk of heart attack and related problems by approximately 15% compared with taking a statin alone. While taking a statin means swallowing a pill every day, the PCSK9 inhibitors are given by self-injection once or twice a month. But inclisiran, or Leqvio, an equally effective drug approved last year, requires an injection just once every 6 months. Instead of blocking PCSK9 after it's made, inclisiran prevents the protein from being made in the first place using a technique called RNA interference. Now a cutting-edge therapy that uses gene editing to permanently shut down PCSK9 production is being tested in people with familial hypercholesterolemia who've already had a heart attack. The CEO of Verve Therapeutics, the company leading the trial, is former Harvard Medical School professor Dr. Sek Kathirasan. To create the therapy, scientists relied on a modification of the powerful gene editing tool called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, which Dr. Kathirasan describes as a molecular pencil and eraser that changes a single letter in the instructions for making PCSK9. The one-time infusion contains tiny lipid particles that contain the editing tools, which travel through the blood to the liver. Once there, the particles release their contents and the editor goes to work in liver cells. Studies in monkeys show that a single infusion lowered blood levels of PCSK9 by 89%, with a corresponding drop in LDL of 61%. Early data from the first human trial should be available later this year. If the therapy proves to be safe and effective, it could also potentially treat people who don't have familial hypercholesterolemia, but who instead have garden variety high cholesterol, says Dr. Natarajan. People with inactivating PCSK9 variants in both gene copies that lead to LDL values as low as 15 are alive and well, which suggests that such levels are safe, he says. And so far, evidence suggests that PCSK9 gene editing is very specific and without identified off-target effects in other places on the genome. Despite the many available treatments to reduce LDL, many people don't take these drugs consistently over the long term, for a variety of reasons like insurance and access issues. That makes the one-and-done option of gene editing especially appealing, particularly since high LDL is very common and an important contributor to cardiovascular disease, the leading cause of death in this country. Dr. Natarajan says, as the Verve trial moves forward, investigators at Harvard and elsewhere are developing gene editing therapies for other inherited heart conditions like cardiac amyloidosis and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which currently have only limited treatment options. Now I'm going to just do a brief research we're watching article from the Harvard Heart Letter. And it's entitled, Short Walks Every Half Hour May Offset the Harms of Too Much Sitting. Breaking up long periods of sitting with a short walk every half hour may benefit your health. For the study, 11 middle-aged and older adults sat in a comfortable chair for 8 hours a day over the course of 5 separate days. One day involved uninterrupted sitting with only short bathroom breaks. On the other 4 days, they either walked on a treadmill for 1 minute after every 30 to 60 minutes of sitting, or walked for 5 minutes after every 30 or 60 minutes. Blood pressure was measured hourly. Blood sugar was measured every 15 minutes. A 5-minute walk after every 30 minutes of sitting was the only regimen that notably lowered blood sugar spikes. Levels were 58% lower compared with sitting all day. But all amounts of walking lowered systolic blood pressure, the first number in a reading, by 4 to 5 points. And with the exception of walking just 1 minute every hour, all the other walking regimens helped to decrease fatigue and improve mood. These findings were published by Medicine and Science in Sport and Exercise in the January 2023 issue. Now here's an article entitled Heart Medication Interactions. Again, from the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2023. Several factors beyond your control, like your age and your genetic makeup, can affect how your body reacts to different medications. And sometimes things you ingest, including certain prescription over-the-counter medications, dietary supplements, or foods, change how medications work. Known as drug-drug or drug-nutrient interactions, these influences can occur at any point of the drug's life cycle, absorption, metabolism, or excretion. Pharmacies routinely use computer systems that automatically flag prescription drug interactions. But that doesn't mean people must always avoid taking drugs with known interactions, says pharmacist Lena Matta, director of ambulatory pharmacy at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. It's not unusual for cardiologists to prescribe drugs with similar desired therapeutic effect, like aspirin and another antiplatelet drug. Clopidogrel or Plavix is a common choice, like aspirin. It helps to prevent blood cell fragments or platelets from sticking together and forming clots. If you read the package insert, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs are on the list of drugs that interact with clopidogrel. Remember, clopidogrel is Plavix. But many drug interactions are nuanced and have to be taken in context, and Matt explains. The challenge is determining the risk-benefit balance, which will vary depending on the person's age and medical conditions. In this example, the intended benefit must be weighed against the risk of unwanted bleeding, a known risk of these drugs. That example in which two drugs have additive effects is one type of interaction. Another occurs when a drug or substance alters the way the body processes or absorbs another drug, which may reduce or increase its effects, says Mata. For example, taking high-dose calcium supplements with thiazide diuretics can cause a dangerously high blood calcium level. But taking calcium supplements with calcium channel blockers can diminish the effect of the drug. Check with your pharmacist or physician if you take thiazide diuretics and calcium supplements on a regular basis. If you've been taking a calcium channel blocker for your blood pressure and start taking calcium, check your blood pressure for a few days to see if it arises. The grapefruit effect. Some interactions can cause blood levels of a drug to rise higher than expected. One well-known example involves cholesterol-lowering statins, which are among the most widely prescribed drugs in the United States. Many people who take statins have heard they should avoid grapefruit or grapefruit juice. This tart fruit contains compounds called furanocoumarins, which interfere with an enzyme in the intestinal tract called CYP3A4. If this enzyme is blocked, it's easier for some statins to pass from your gut to your bloodstream. The resulting higher than normal statin level may heighten the risk of side effects, which are typically mild and include muscle or joint pain. What's less well known is that certain statins are more likely to be affected by grapefruit. For example, lovastatin or Mevacor and simvastatin or Zocor. So people taking these statins who enjoy grapefruit might want to ask about switching to a different statin like pravastatin or Pravacol or rosuvastatin or Crestor. Even then, with most statins, a small daily glass of grapefruit juice is unlikely to cause problems. The studies that show dangerous drug levels involve drinking very large amounts, more than 3 cups a day, she says. It's always a good idea to check with your doctor, she adds. While other drug-drug interactions with heart medications are possible, they are too numerous to list. To minimize your risk, use the same pharmacy for all your prescriptions and tell all your health care providers what medications you're taking, including over-the-counter drugs and supplements. St. John's wort, W-O-R-T, turmeric, and other dietary supplements have been shown to interact with certain heart medications. Anytime you get a new prescription, ask your pharmacist or doctor about how the drug works, the possible side effects, and other medications it may interact with. Now we're going to read another Research We're Watching brief article. And this one is called, Symptom-Free Dips in Blood Pressure May Precede Unexplained Falls. If your blood pressure drops sharply when you stand, a condition called orthostatic hypotension, you may feel lightheaded or dizzy. But a new study suggests that older people with orthostatic hypotension often have no symptoms, and they're more likely to experience unexplained falls than people who do have symptoms. The study, published in the December 2022 issue of Age and Aging, includes 934 people ages 70 and older. Testing revealed that 11% had orthostatic hypotension, which can be caused by various medications, medical conditions, or age. It's defined as a sustained drop in systolic blood pressure, the first number in a reading, of at least 20 points, or in diastolic blood pressure, the second number of at least 10 points, within 3 minutes of standing. Two-thirds of the people with orthostatic hypotension reported no dizziness or related symptoms. But during the follow-up, which lasted 6.3 years, they had a higher risk of unexplained falls than those who reported symptoms. To avoid falls when getting out of bed, sit up slowly and wait a minute or two before standing. Finally, a third Research We're Watching article is entitled, Rising Alcohol Intake is Linked to a Higher Risk of Atrial Fibrillation. People who increase their drinking in later midlife may raise their risk of atrial fibrillation. The study included 43,758 people aged 50 to 64 who completed lifestyle questionnaires once in the mid-1990s and again 5 years later. During the median follow-up period, 5,302 people were diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, a heart rhythm disorder that raises the risk of stroke. A high alcohol intake, more than 21 drinks per week, was linked to a higher risk of atrial fib. And people who increased their drinking over the five-year period were more likely to develop atrial fib compared with people who maintained a low, less than 7 drinks per week, or moderate, 14 to 20.9 drinks per week intake. Researchers adjusted for multiple factors that could affect the results, like smoking, high blood pressure, and diabetes. These findings, published December 2022 by the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, add further support for limiting alcohol to protect your cardiovascular health. And we're going to conclude the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2023 by reading an article called Raising Awareness About Aortic Disease. New guidelines highlight the risk and screening recommendation for conditions affecting the body's largest blood vessel. The aorta, the conduit that carries blood from the heart to the body, is a bit wider than a garden hose where it emerges from the heart. This thick-walled vessel curves up and over the heart in a gentle arc, narrowing slightly as it extends down through the center of the body. As is true for most heart problems, smoking and high blood pressure can heighten the risk of problems with the aorta. But so can genes and certain medical conditions, which can weaken the wall of the aorta. As a result, the aortic wall may tear, what's called an aortic dissection, or bulge outward, an aortic aneurysm, and possibly rupture. Although aortic disease is far less prevalent than many types of heart disease, a ruptured aortic aneurysm is often life-threatening. That's why early detection, monitoring, and treatment of aortic disease are vital. There's a real need for greater awareness about aortic disease, not just among the general public, but also among physicians, who may not appreciate the risk factors and screening recommendations, says Dr. Eric Isselbacher, co-director of the Thoracic Aortic Center at Massachusetts General Hospital. He chaired the writing committee for the updated American College of Cardiology American Heart Association guidelines for aortic disease, which were published in the November 2022. About three-fourths of all aortic aneurysms occur in the center of the body, below the kidneys. Known as abdominal aortic aneurysms, most grow very slowly and don't cause any symptoms. But an undiscovered one can expand rapidly and burst with little warning. Screening involves a simple one-time abdominal ultrasound, which the guidelines recommend for people at greatest risk. And the people at risk who should get an ultrasound are anyone with a family history of abdominal aortic aneurysm, men aged 65 to 75 who have smoked at least 100 cigarettes over the course of their lives. Those are the two groups that should be screened. Aneurysms in the chest area are classified by location. Those in the descending aorta, the section after the arch of the aorta, are more common in older people who smoke and have high blood pressure. Aneurysms in the ascending aorta usually occur in younger people and may be linked to certain genetic conditions like bicuspid aortic valve. About one in every 100 people has a bicuspid aortic valve, and half of them have an enlarged aorta, says Dr. Isselbecker. If a person has a thoracic aneurysm, there's a 20% chance that another family member also has one. But people don't necessarily know the details of their family health issues. Someone will say, "I think my father died of a massive heart attack. He clutched his chest, collapsed, and died before he got to the hospital." Without an autopsy, which is uncommon, it's impossible to know the underlying cause, which could have been a ruptured thoracic aneurysm. The guidelines now consider anyone with an aneurysm and a family member who experienced sudden death before the age of 50 to be at increased risk for an aortic rupture. The risk of rupture increases as an aneurysm grows, so people with known aneurysms need periodic imaging tests to check the size. If it reaches a certain threshold, which varies depending on the person, a surgical repair procedure may be recommended, ideally done at a major medical center with a team of aortic disease specialists, says Dr. Isselbecker. And just to summarize, who should be checked for a thoracic aortic aneurysm? A heart ultrasound or echocardiogram can be used to screen. And the people who should be checked are those who have a bicuspid aortic valve or have a parent, sibling, or child with a bicuspid aortic valve, those who have had surgery to replace or repair an aortic valve before age 70, those who have a parent, sibling, or child who has a thoracic aortic aneurysm, or who has experienced a rupture of an aneurysm, and those who have Marfan syndrome, Loeys-Dietz syndrome, vascular Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, Turner syndrome, and certain other genetic conditions. Now we're going to turn to the Harvard Women's Health Watch briefly. This is the Harvard Women's Health Watch of April 2023. And we're going to read from Ask the Doctors by Dr. Tony Golan and Hope Ricciotti. And the first question is, why do my ears feel clogged? Over the past few days, my hearing seems muffled. What might be triggering this clogged sensation? Answer: it can be uncomfortable and a little jarring to feel like your ears are stuffed up, especially when it prevents us from hearing clearly. But it's not always easy to identify why. A common reason is impacted earwax, a sticky buildup of the otherwise normal secretions that keep the ear canal lubricated. While you may be tempted to try removing it with a cotton swab, this tactic can backfire, pushing wax farther in. Try over-the-counter earwax removal drops to soften and loosen waxy buildup. Clogged ears can also result from swollen or blocked eustachian tubes, which connect the middle ear to the back of the throat. This can happen for brief periods during air travel, but also due to allergies, sinuses, or ear infections, or other respiratory viruses. Sudden onset of muffled hearing in one ear may signal an urgent problem requiring prompt treatment to prevent or reduce possible hearing loss. See your doctor if the problem lasts beyond a day or two. The next question is, how do I approach a new partner about STI testing? I'm dating again after a long marriage and wondering how to ask a new partner if he's been tested for sexually transmitted infections. Any tips? That's STIs. That's a thorny issue for many people who've reemerged on the dating scene after a lengthy monogamous relationship. But discussing sexually transmitted infections early in a new relationship is absolutely crucial to protecting both partners' health, since learning if either of you is infected can prevent the disease from spreading. Don't count on noticing signs alerting you to STIs, which include genital herpes, hepatitis, chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, pubic lice, human papillomavirus, or HIV/AIDS. Many STIs don't produce any symptoms, and people can pass them to others without realizing it. Ideally, start a conversation with your partner about STI testing during a private, non-sexual moment, and frame it in a way that makes it clear that you're being proactive. Suggest getting tested together at a doctor's office, urgent care center, or pharmacy-based health clinic, for example, or tested separately and sharing results before becoming intimate. Disclosing STI status is an important step in establishing a trusting partnership. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.